This episode of The Sweaty Penguin is brought to you by crutches. Do you wish that walking could make your arms hurt? Try crutches today.
But what about China and India's emissions, Ethan? Why should we do anything if they're just gonna keep polluting? It's a valid question, and one my comedy writers are fed up with trying to make funny. But it's not really an argument to do away with climate action in the United States. Good morning, I'm Ethan Brown, and this is Tip of the Iceberg, where I will break down some environmental news and then answer a question from our listeners on the air. Submit questions via Patreon, email, or social media. Patron questions go to the front of the line, so sign up at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. On Thursday, global leaders convened in Dubai for the 2023 United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP28, where they will seek to form and strengthen collective climate commitments. Normally, I'm really optimistic going into these conferences. There's nothing your boy loves more than cozying up with a cup of hot cocoa and an international climate conference on a rainy day. But I always try to keep it real with you all, and to be honest, my hopes are a lot lower this year than they've been in years past. Maybe I should be more hopeful. They did hammer out a structure to the loss and damage fund on day one. But between escalating international violence, failures during previous climate summits in 2023, UAE's peaceful assembly restrictions, and the selection of an oil CEO as COP28 president, there's a lot of ways COP28 could be derailed, not to mention the exotic dancers I hired possibly showing up right as conversations start getting productive. You didn't hear that from me. I hope all goes well, but I'm very much bracing for the possibility that it doesn't. And if negotiations falter, I'm sure it will bring back questions of why we should even bother addressing climate change at home. After all, if China and India do nothing, the world wouldn't meet its climate goals, and everyone would face the consequences, including the devastating loss of the pizza party reward we're all gunning for. So I wanted to address that today, because this why bother question is premised on a complete misconception that climate action is a sacrifice. And it isn't. Trust me, I've been to my fair share of sacrificial rituals, and you can always tell when people are amping up to throw a virgin into a volcano. Rest in peace, Dave, we miss you. In reality, smart climate policies also help local environments, public health, justice, national security, and the economy. So if the US were to go it alone, yeah, it would be bad for the climate. But by every other metric, we'd be the ones who come out ahead. This may be our most patriotic episode to date. We'll see. In the past, one could have argued that climate action presented prohibitive economic trade-offs. Today, that's rarely true. A few years ago, the U.S. Global Change Research Program released their fifth national climate assessment, and they found over the last decade, wind and solar energy costs dropped 70% and 90% respectively. Similarly, the International Renewable Energy Agency found in 2020, 62% of newly installed renewables for power generation were cheaper than the cheapest fossil fuel alternative. Yes, even cheaper than the I-can't-believe-it's-not-fracking knockoffs. And for coal specifically, according to an Energy Innovation Policy and Technology study, it is now more expensive for 99% of America's coal plants to keep running than it is to build an entirely new solar or wind energy operation nearby. That's right. Do you know how rare it is for it to be cheaper to shut something down and build a new thing? There are only but so many times in our lives we can wield a sledgehammer and have the moral high ground, and I am not throwing away that opportunity. And it's not just clean energy. The 2022 Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report analyzed the economic costs of 38 climate solutions categories, finding that 16 actually start out saving money. It is literally cheaper to implement these solutions than to maintain the status quo. Cue Extreme Couponing Climate Edition. In addition to solar, wind, and nuclear energy, these cost-saving solutions include energy-efficient lighting and appliances, fuel-efficient vehicles, optimized shipping, curbed fluorinated gas emissions, public transportation, and bikes and e-bikes. And sure, bikes can't tow a trailer, but they're the eco-friendly way to make sure you never have to help friends move. So if the US embraces these solutions, and China and India lag behind, we unfortunately would not be exempt from climate-induced damage. But from a purely economic lens, it's their loss, not ours. Guys, okay, fine, have your fun. Beyond an economic boost, smart climate policies can also make life better for Americans. And that's the kind of country I want Trisha Paytas' new baby Elvis to grow up in. The IPCC report also compared 43 climate solutions to 16 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, including an end to poverty and hunger, better education, gender equality, clean water, innovation, and world peace, to see if there were synergies, trade-offs, or a combination. Out of 396 such permutations, the report found 271 synergies, 113 with a mix, and only 12 pure trade-offs. Only 12 times did a climate solution and a sustainable development goal clash. That's the same as the number of kids Nick Cannon has. In other words, a vast majority of climate solutions are not sacrifices, but rather opportunities to improve life across the board. Of course, that doesn't absolve individual climate policies of criticism. You can still be angry on Twitter, don't worry. Poorly designed bans, taxes, regulations, and investments often hamper economic growth, leave communities behind, or incorporate irrelevant political priorities, the options for which have never been more numerous. At this point, it feels like someone's using ChatGPT to auto-generate new stuff to fight over every week. But if you don't like a climate policy, that's an indictment of that particular policy, not climate action generally. We're better served voicing concerns about specific legislation than debating whether or not we should do anything. It's like when you ask your girlfriend what she wants for dinner, and she says, "I don't know, I'm not really hungry." The question isn't whether or not to get her food, but what food to get her. Pro tip, it's sushi. It's always sushi. The other thing about this why bother question is it seems to suggest that the US, China, and India aren't currently addressing climate change, that we're the three stooges of climate inaction, and I think it's clear the US is Larry. As fun as that show would be though, getting into fossil-fueled hijinks, that too is misguided. From 2005 to 2019, US emissions dropped by about 16%. In 2022, renewable energy accounted for 21.3% of utility-scale electricity generation in the US, and nuclear contributed another 18.2%. That's nearly 40% of the grid decarbonized. And you didn't even notice, did you? That's right, you were too busy paying attention to Trisha Paytas' baby the whole time. On the policy side, in the past 5 years alone, the US has passed several laws with climate implications, including bipartisan efforts such as the Fiscal Responsibility Act, CHIPS Act, Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, Use It Act, BEST Act, Nuclear Energy Leadership Act, and Great American Outdoors Act. To be fair, some senators thought the CHIPS Act was to put Doritos in the Capitol cafeteria, and the BEST Act was just the best act, but still, pretty cool to see so much bipartisanship on climate. Moreover, the bulk of US climate action to date has come not from federal laws, but the private sector. In 2021 alone, climate tech startups raised $53.7 billion from venture capital and private equity, and only like half of that went to my solar panel nightlight. It only works during the day, but it's the thought that counts. American climate action is well underway, and the question isn't whether or not to do it, but how policymakers can speed it up, help anyone negatively impacted by these changes, and sometimes just get out of the way. We've talked before about how peeling back maritime shipping restrictions, excessive permitting requirements, fossil fuel subsidies, and other counterproductive regulations can help the climate, help the economy, and lead to less government involvement. There's a lot of different options, and I encourage you to listen to every other episode in our library to find the solutions you like best. Also, our moms would like everyone to listen, so they have someone to talk about the old episodes with from before we were famous. Though China and India aren't as far along, there are positive signs, and as your therapist told you, don't ignore green flags just because you got the ick. China's carbon emissions are expected to peak by 2025 under current policies, and though these industries are rife with serious humanitarian issues, China is by far the world's top supplier of renewable energy technologies and will have over 80% of the world's solar manufacturing capacity through 2026. And India, while way too reliant on coal, has implemented measures to support their solar, energy storage, and green hydrogen industries. In fact, at last year's COP27 conference, it was India who proposed a global phase down of fossil fuels. India's objection doesn't seem to be with climate action. It seems to be with Western countries who are trying to form global agreements on coal but refuse to do the same for oil and gas, which is totally understandable. No one is above criticism, whether it's your parents, a tentative deal on coal emissions, or even Alexandria Daddario. Admittedly, I could never bring myself to criticize her, and Ms. Daddario, if you're listening, I'm single and I will cook for you every day. As one of only a few countries still relying heavily on coal, India's basically saying, we'll phase down our coal, but only if you phase down your oil and gas, too. They're playing the same why-should-we-do-anything-if-the-US-won't game of chicken. And don't get me wrong, I usually love a good will-they-won't-they bit of sexual tension, but it's a little stressful when it's between entire governments. So, yeah, there are certainly petrostates like Russia or Saudi Arabia with whom climate negotiations are a real upward climb. But China and India are not really in that group. It's like thinking the band kids and the science kids are friends just because they're all nerdy. Like, just because you're not in either group doesn't mean they're all the same. Obviously, the band kids are way more unbearable. Of course, China and India are far from perfect, as are we. But there is room to negotiate and work together. Despite the laundry list of reasons to be pessimistic about international diplomacy right now, obstructing American climate progress in the name of China and India isn't the answer. If other countries follow our climate leadership, that's a win-win. If they don't, we're the ones who come out ahead economically and societally, and once they see that, they'll end up joining us. We are not the mean girls. You can sit with us. If we can just stop pretending climate action is a chore, we can spotlight the exciting benefits of smart climate solutions to the world and show that the only chore is me cooking for Alexandria Daddario. If Travis Kelce could land Taylor Swift just by talking about it on a podcast, then I can only assume the sky's the limit. And now, here's Mo with the news.
This is Mo with the Sweaty Penguin, and this is this week's news. September's United Nations Climate Ambition Summit, meant to inspire global action against climate change, ended without significant commitments from major emitting nations. It's almost like bringing your burnout child to a job fair in hopes to spark something in them, but they only leave with a more intense hatred of spending time with you. This is why they like their stepdad more. The palpable disappointment was reminiscent of how 2010's The Last Airbender live-action movie, meant to inspire fans to spend money, ended up with 5 Golden Raspberry Awards and 2 canceled sequels. And yes, a Golden Raspberry is a real thing and not only a disgusting Urban Dictionary term. Do not look it up. I said don't look it up. What were we just talking about? Oh, the big nerd convention. Sorry, the climate summit. Countries like the US, China, India, Russia, France, and the UK, responsible for over half of global greenhouse gas emissions and 90% of Wikipedia's worst movies of the 21st century, were actually not invited, which is like throwing an intervention and not inviting the alcoholic. At the summit, countries like Germany, Denmark, and Marshall Islands, Brazil, and Thailand made positive pledges, and some companies announced reductions in carbon footprints. So we'll see how that influences COP28 in the coming weeks. 6 young Portuguese individuals, aged between 11 and 24, have filed a lawsuit against 32 governments at the European Court of Human Rights, or ECHR, in Strasbourg, which begs the question, what have you done today? The claimants argue that the increasing forest fires in Portugal since 2017 are a direct consequence of global warming, and current policies are insufficient to curb climate change enough to protect life and health, and to curb your enthusiasm. The governments involved challenge the claims and further contend the ECHR does not have authority to require climate policy, and that latter point is probably true. It's like asking your mom to protect you from the middle school bully, but like, she can try, but Tyler from Recess might be a notch above her pay grade. At Lake Tefé in Brazil, where rising temperatures have dried up most of the water, a sudden and alarming death of over 100 Amazonian river dolphins, accompanied by thousands of dead fish, has emerged as a major concern. And not just because they owed me money. Unfortunately, this may explain why my sketchy uncle came back into town with several pounds of exotic meats for Grandma's 80th barbecue. Local residents describe the scene as apocalyptic, and while several reasons, including diseases and contamination, are being explored, extreme heat is suspected to be a significant factor. The flesh-eating zombies aren't helping either. These dolphins, recognized as indicators of river health and classified as endangered, are pivotal to the ecosystem and also hold a semi-mythical status in traditional culture. For some reason, no one is taking me up on my proposal of having everyone pee in the lake to fill it back up. New York City has introduced a mandatory composting law, requiring residents to separate their organic waste for curbside collection, with full compliance expected by spring 2025. But let's be honest, the rats are just gonna keep mixing them up. The initiative is anticipated to set a national precedent similar to the city's bottle and can recycling program established in 1989. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm sure Seinfeld did an entire episode on it. What's the deal with cans? Composting will reduce methane emissions from landfills and turn waste into beneficial products, like compost or biogas. While residents will participate, businesses will rely on private haulers for organic waste removal, which is funny because a private hauler is what I call myself when I gotta go number two. The initiative marks the most significant shift in New York's waste disposal methods since 1989, the year Taylor Swift was born, and could inspire other cities around the country to try similar policies. Maybe we could turn Tay-Tay's B-Day into an environmental holiday. Maybe we could call it Clean, Taylor's version. The Swift parrot, no relation to Taylor or the programming language, is a critically endangered species that has been named the 2023 Australian Bird of the Year in the Guardian BirdLife Australia biennial poll. The bird, which has had a particularly cruel summer, has wondered, is it over now? As its population neared endgame, and it searched for a place in the world. That's when Swift parrots became the lucky one and got out of the woods. Surging in votes following a mastermind ground roots campaign highlighting its delicate status. With an 11,171 vote run in the final 24 hours, that's when it narrowly surpassed the tawny frogmouth, the Swift Parrot's antihero, a victory some are calling better than wrench. The Swift Parrot still faces death by a thousand cuts, with projections showing fewer than 100 individuals by 2031. emphasizing the urgent need to shake it off with some habitat conservation so these important birds can stay safe. This has been Mo with the Sweaty Penguin, and this has been this week's Weekly Update.
Are you tired of sitting on the toilet with ease? Then crutches are for you. With crutches, you'll be whining about how sore your palms are in a matter of days. And the perks don't stop there. Order now, and you'll receive a free 30-minute session with some guy who thinks crutches are super easy and gets mad at you for complaining. See? He's not tired after 15 seconds of using them. You must be super weak. Crutches. Way more work than you think.
Welcome back to Tip of the Iceberg. It's time for Ask Me Anything, where our listeners get a chance to ask me any environmental questions they may have. Submit questions via Patreon, email, or social media. Patron questions go to the front of the line, so be sure to sign up at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. Today's Ask Me Anything comes from Twitter, comes from @SpivChavo, and there's a few questions in here. I'm gonna take two of them, one at a time, paraphrasing here, but 52 days ago, I read the first reports about a pronounced El Niño this year. Since then, the media is full of reports of record heat. Now, 52 days later, someone, yourself, finally chimes in to say, hey, it's an El Niño year, maybe that's why it's so hot. Yes, that is true. I did a podcast and an op-ed about this. I thought it was really important to explain that even though climate change does cause the vast majority of the extreme heat that we're seeing, there is an El Niño event that we're transitioning into. That's what's pushing all these records over the top, and it's really important to make that distinction as opposed to blaming the entire thing on climate change. It's mostly climate change, but there is this other important factor as well. It would be the equivalent of during a La Niña event saying, oh, climate change doesn't exist because we're seeing a little bit of cooling. That's not accurate either. Go on to the question. Have you seen this graph? It shows that thermal radiation is inverse to CO2 concentrations. How come I've never seen mention of this in any discussion of CO2 levels? So, this graph, I know our listeners can't see this, but basically, the greenhouse effect works where carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases will absorb infrared radiation. So infrared radiation will hit the surface of the Earth, bounce back up into the atmosphere, and get trapped by these greenhouse gases. They almost act as a blanket over the Earth. And the more greenhouse gases that are there, the bigger this warming effect is, because basically you are sort of creating this blanket. And the more greenhouse gases that are there, the thicker this blanket is. Now, the reason that thermal radiance, which is basically this concept, is inverse to CO2 concentrations, which essentially means the more CO2 that there is, the less that each additional molecule of CO2 going into the atmosphere is going to have an effect. That's basically what I believe he's asking. And the reason that's the case is because, think about it this way, if you have one blanket over yourself and you're still cold, so you put on a second blanket, that second blanket's going to have a pretty big effect. It's going to trap a lot more heat. But if you have 27 blankets on you and you put on a 28th blanket, that 28th blanket isn't going to do very much. And the reason is there's a certain amount at which You've just trapped all the heat you can, and there's not much more you can do. You can only get so thick a layer of greenhouse gases. So that's essentially why that's the case. The reason it's not discussed much, I think, is it doesn't really apply yet to the level of carbon dioxide that we've put into the atmosphere to date. Pre-industrial times, there were less than 300 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Today, that's up to around 420 parts per million. It's a big difference, but it's not a huge difference on this thermal radiation graph. It's each new molecule of carbon dioxide is going to have a similar effect today as it did in, say, 1900. It'll be a little less, but not by much. So we're not at a point where we can just throw our hands up and say, okay, we've emitted so much carbon that each new molecule is not going to have much effect. That's not the case. We're seeing a pronounced warming effect from each new ton of carbon that we emit, and that's why it's important to mitigate carbon emissions and get that under control. The second question that I'll address now, and this is getting really into the weeds here, but I love it. Can a doubling of atmospheric CO2 cause a significant increase in the absorption of Earth's IR radiation in the only effective wave band 14 to 16 microns? So what does that mean? Basically, this is actually something I learned about in high school astronomy. I did a really cool astronomy research program at Phillips Academy where I went to high school. And so I'm going to explain this using an astronomy analogy to try to make it a little more fun. So one of the projects that we did is we would look for exoplanets, planets in other solar systems attached to other stars. And the way we would do this is there's a log where astronomers will compile where they suspect exoplanets are. So we would pick a star where we suspect an exoplanet. We would point the telescope at that star and we would image it during the time in which we expect the exoplanet to orbit in front of the star, so that if we're sitting on Earth and we are looking at that star, it would be as if the exoplanet is coming in front of our point of view. Now, a planet is way smaller than a star, but it's slightly big enough where when you take the graph, after you take all these images, and in each image you look at the brightness of that star, you will see there's a little dip in brightness during the time that that exoplanet is moving in front of the star. So that was something we would do in our astronomy research program. We would take a star, we would image it, we would look at that, it's called a light curve, where we would see that little drop off in brightness, and that would tell us some information about this possible exoplanet, that it exists, how big it is, how fast it's moving, that sort of stuff. Now, if you take that a step further, something you can do is take those images and look at it on, I believe it's called a spectrograph, where you basically see in each wavelength on the color spectrum, going from infrared waves, red waves, green waves, blue waves, ultraviolet waves, all the stuff in between, we can look and see how the light curve is different in these different wavelengths. And in particular, if you get really, really minuscule, different elements, different chemicals will absorb different wavelengths differently. So carbon was the example here, because we're talking about carbon dioxide absorbing greenhouse gases. It's not that carbon dioxide absorbs all infrared radiation. It absorbs infrared radiation between this, in the question, it's 14 to 16 micron range. I'll go with that. And there are also little teeny tiny spots where at some number of microns, it suddenly absorbs that number of infrared radiation. But most of it, it does not. It's absorbing very specific wavelengths. And so for the astronomy analogy, we could use that to look and say, oh, this planet has carbon because the infrared radiation at this micron level is different. And if we know that planet has carbon, maybe it could support life, and we go on. We didn't do that in high school. But as it pertains to greenhouse gases, that's relevant too, because carbon dioxide is only going to be absorbing infrared radiation at this particular micron level, and that means that, again, this blanket analogy, if it fills up to the point where there's no difference in adding more carbon into the atmosphere, you've absorbed all you can at that micron level, then in theory, global warming effects would stop. The reason it doesn't is because it's not a hard, fast line. It's more of a bell curve where at the tail ends of that 14 to 16 range, there's less sensitivity, so more carbon would start to build up that sensitivity. Similarly, like I mentioned, there are these random lines where there's more sensitivity, and so those can continue to support more infrared radiation and more warming. Again, I'm not a scientist, so I'm explaining this the best I can, but that's to answer that question. Even though that main 14 to 16 micron wavelength could fill up faster, there are these other areas in which you can continue to build on your warming effect. And again, the reason it doesn't come up much is because It's interesting science. It's fun to talk about. Scientists do need to understand this, but in terms of policymaking, in terms of innovation, in terms of just general strategy moving forward, really what we need to know is that climate change is here, it's worsening, and if we cut carbon emissions, we can reduce that warming effect. That does it for this week's episode of Tip of the Iceberg. Thank you so much for that question. That was a lot of fun to not just explore, but to remember back to some of the high school astronomy knowledge and see how that applies to my work today in climate change. So, a lot of fun. Special thanks to our Emperor Penguin patrons, Lawrence Harris and Brownies Central. If you want to get your question on the Sweaty Penguin, you can send it in via Patreon, email, or social media, as always. And thank you all for listening, and I'll see you soon. Our next deep dive will actually cover some of this. We are talking about carbon specifically, and talking about some good news around how carbon emissions work. We have a very, very, very special guest coming on, so I will see you then.